Hello there. Hi.
Hello and welcome.
Welcome.
8123 podcast phone composition.
Phone
part two.
I feel better now. Like just a
yeah.
The first one I was like, this is weird not having you in the same room. but now I feel like I'm used to it.
Yeah. I think this is the second burped. I feel like this is the first second person we've had on the podcast to do like a full interview with.
Yeah.
We brought Halvo back.
Halvo, yeah.
For like, everyone
should remember that madness.
Yeah. So today we have Ryan Dawson from All Time Low. Great guy.
Yeah, great.
Awesome talk.
Great guy, great smile.
Yeah, we get deep into talking about recording an album and things. So it'll get a bit specific for people that play instruments for a second, but
if you're a rocker, you're gonna love it.
For the most part, but for the most part, it'll be enjoyed by all. I think so. Yeah, they have a record coming out in I guess about 2 weeks from now, very beginning of April.
Yep.
And I have had the privilege of hearing about 8 songs, and it is radical. So I'm super excited for you guys to hear that, and hopefully you'll get some more insight on that. And then Sad Summer, which is something that I meant to bring up when we were talking, but it's like we haven't been on tour in the United States or Canada with All Time Low since like 2009 or 8.
Yeah. Yeah. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
That's weird.
10 years.
Over
is insane.
No, 12 years.
Over 10 years. Yeah.
Jesus.
So that's exciting.
Yeah, I mean it's so funny looking back, like we are way better friends with them now than we were at that point when we toured with them.
Yeah.
It's like I don't know when that happened, like in the last, I don't know, what do you say, 5 years or so?
4 or 5 years, yeah.
Yeah, we were like we seem to like be hanging out with them quite often, which is it's great, and they're great,
yeah.
great guys, and couldn't be more excited to tour with them in the summer.
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome tour, man. It's going to be crazy. So, yeah, we're pumped. So, we're going to keep kicking out these episodes here. So, you'll be hearing from us often. So,
what room do you do these in your house?
Right now, I'm just outside.
Staying away from people.
Yeah, I got dog barking, got a baby maybe crying. So I am outside, but I'm keeping my distance from people.
So Pat's bringing it from the outside. I'm bringing it from the shed. We're doing it. We're having fun.
Yes. Heck yeah. Well, here it is. Our chat with Ryan Dawson, and we will talk to you guys in the next couple days.
Cool.
Hello, hello. Are you there?
Hello?
I'm here.
Hi. Hi. Hey, hey,
hi.
Hey.
Hi.
How's it going
it?
Out there?
It's good, man. We had a rough couple of weeks here. Obviously, everyone's going through it.
I know.
I just got power back about, I think like 5 or 6 days ago. And then I just got my Wi-Fi about 2 days ago. But I'm so lucky that that was the worst of it. So,
yeah. Oh, man.
So you had no power for like 2 weeks?
Brutal.
No, man. So where the tornado hit, where the worst damage was done was literally less than 0.1 miles away from my house. Like, it was basically across the street from my block. So I had like a tree down in my backyard, a tree down in my front yard. Some of my fence got damaged, like taken down, but that was the extent of it. And then no power, obviously, for about 9 days, 10 days. And then when the tree in my backyard fell, it took down my Wi-Fi stuff. And but again, like, you know, geez, some of the shit I've seen out here, like, I'm very lucky, very, very lucky.
Jesus, man. Yeah. That's so rough.
Yeah. Hard couple weeks. I know. I feel so bad for, like, the businesses, like, because obviously a ton of them had to shut down because of the tornado. Then they opened back up for, like, a week, and then they're like, nah, fuck that. And then it's just closed again. But I know that everyone's feeling that across the world.
Yeah. Crazy time.
It's crazy time. Hard to even put into words how fucking nuts this is.
Yeah, it's so eerie. Like, every day it gets a little weirder, too, because it just becomes, like, settles in as reality a little bit more. Like, it's not just a fear. Yeah. It's like, okay, now this is our life for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
It's just, like, accepting it over time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's, like, we just kind of wanted to keep the podcast going, keep everything as good as we can, and Britain provides entertainment, and I'm sure that the people at this point are just so sick of only thinking about that, you know.
I agree completely.
Yeah,
just like trying to find any little bit of a break from, you know, only thinking about that. And, you know, obviously you guys as a band have so much exciting things going on right now. Is it feel good to have this many songs out from the album now?
Yeah,
man. People can kind of get a taste of what it's going to be like.
Yeah, so we started doing the record, or like writing for the record. Although, to be fair, we weren't even writing for the record. We just started writing for fun in January, February of last year, 2019, in my studio in Nashville. And we came away after like 3 weeks. It was maybe 20 songs. We were like, oh, this is fucking incredible. Then we got together in Palm Springs, did the same thing out there, just band guys, producer, co-producer, and like our assistant / fifth guitarist kind of guy, Dan Swank, in a house in Palm Springs. And just, we can dive into that a little bit more if you want to. But so we're just sitting on these songs for a year, some of them for a year. And for me, like, the most nerve-wracking part of being in a band is releasing the first song from a new record or from a new project.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, it's just, it's terrifying. And because you know you love it. You think you love it. At that point, you don't even know anymore. Like, there's no perspective. You just know you know it. And so we released that first song, Some Kind of Disaster, and the results were just, like, the reviews were from fans, from critics, from cynics, from everyone, was just, like, overwhelmingly positive. And that's, you know, that feeling of just that weight off the shoulders and that just huge release of breath was unbelievable. And then to do it again with our second song on the record called Sleeping In, kind of the same thing, and just the same fan reaction, which is really, you know, what drives bands like you and I, is the fan reaction to it, much more so than any kind of like mainstream media or anything like that.
Totally.
And that fan reaction just kept pushing us in a very good direction. And then again with Getaway Green. So far it's been incredible. But of course now you're like, oh God, did we release the first of the best three songs and the rest of the record is not as good?
How were you guys like always sure that the some kind of disaster was going to be the first one that people heard? Because I that's always the hardest thing. Like I think like the past two records I've for us I've like sent you the first couple options, you know, like, and been like, oh, which ones you put out, because it's always you can overthink that part.
Oh
my gosh. Not only, but like, you can overthink it, and we certainly have, but also, like, it really does steer the ship in a certain direction. It's like, that's the first thing the fans hear. They're already, you know, they could already be like, oh, it's too synth heavy, I'm not going to like this record. And then you're pulling yourself up. But funny enough, when we wrote that song, that was probably the second or third song we wrote in Nashville. So it was, you know, end of January. And Alex and I just kept saying to each other, I cannot wait to open with this song during a set. Like, it's just such a cool, the energy just builds and builds till that first chorus. And I love opening with a song like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what we just kept, like, we would just, like, fantasize about playing it on stage. And so we wrote, you know, the rest of the record, and then we just could never get past the thought of, like, oh, wait, this does feel like an opening track. Yeah, for live, but also it's a great taste of the record. It kind of encapsulates, like, the feel of the entire record. So it wasn't obvious, but looking back at our discussions about how we wanted to open with it live, it kind of makes sense that it was.
Yeah. So did you just give away what you're going to be opening with on Sad Summer?
That's actually a fair point. I would hope so, man. You know how good it is when you get to play like. Yeah. When you open with a new song and the crowd likes it, like that's a great feeling.
Oh my god,
that's the best feeling.
It just like makes it so none of the shows doesn't even matter. It's like it's gonna be fun no matter what.
Well,
we've had. Oh, go ahead, Garrett.
Well, I was gonna say, speaking about first songs, I remember you guys putting Weightless out on Warped Tour, and because you guys played those like couple shows on Warped Tour, that's over 10 years ago. And I remember you guys opened with that song, and it was fucking crazy. I remember standing with Pat and being like, they just put this out, and everyone's going fucking wild. It was, like, I have such a memory of that. Like, it's such a...
Oh, man, that's really cool that you remember that. Yeah, that was a time, and I don't like to, you know, I don't like to speak ahead of myself, but the feeling of this momentum and this record and everything that's happened around it so far... is, I keep saying it, is like when we put out Weightless and like when we were touring on Nothing Personal, just an overwhelming, it's like we're just riding this wave and the fan base is just, you know, just pushing us from behind, and it's a great feeling. But
yeah,
it's we've definitely put out songs before and the fan reaction was good, and then we go to play it live, we open with it, and you can just like hear the eye rolls like, oh, they're gonna do this thing now where they only play new music. But so far, yeah, we'll see.
It's so funny like how instantly you can like tell, you know, it's like, you can really tell if you know, if this is going to be a record that like just our core fans are really going to be into, or if this is something that like everybody is you know, going to love. And it's like, you know, sometimes it takes you a second to like admit to yourself that like, that's what's happening, but you can feel it. I remember we talked about that when we were in the Philippines, and I think it was when we put out American Candy, and you guys put out Future Hearts. Yeah. Future Hearts, and it was like both kind of like happening at the same time, where it was like, hey, this just like feels awesome right now.
So
and being a band.
And what's weird about that is that it's not like, look, I could find bad reviews about this new record or about Nothing Personal or about Future Hearts, and I could find positive reviews of other records, but it's somehow like, you're right. It's just a feeling like there's some sort of, you just feel this like force in one direction of like, okay, we're going to have to convince the fan base, or okay, they're along for the ride. And I don't really know how it's like tangible like that, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's such a instant thing too. Like in the first 10 minutes of putting a song out, I feel like you'd be like, either, oh, this is going to happen, or, we're kind of going to have to convince
too late to pull it.
What's the next song we're going to put out, and when can we put it out?
Dude, I mean, I know we touched upon this on the last time I was on your guys' podcast, but I remember when we put out Dirty Laundry off of Renegade first, like, I think that had a big feeling that had that same feeling of like, I remember listening to it and I just imagine the fans being like, okay, just wait, like give it 2 minutes, the heavy guitars are coming and that they're going to be there and everything like that. And I remember just feeling like, yeah, they're not, it's going to take some convincing, and I just don't have that right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what a better feeling to have going on.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, generally speaking, it ends up just fine. Like it certainly did, but it is a lot, and you know, you have this emotion from the past year of ups and downs, and like, you know, the record is done and it's not, and it's all this, and then the feeling of putting it out and having everyone accept it—it's just like, oh, thank fucking God.
Yeah,
yeah. Was there any debate between Some Kind of Disaster and Slipping In? Because that, I mean, they're both awesome, but the chorus to Sleeping In, I think I texted you about it when you sent it to me, but I mean, that has to be your best song. It's just,
oh man, thank
you. Insane.
No, oddly enough, like that was actually, Sleeping In wasn't gonna be a pre-release song, and
oh wow,
so we had, I mean, it was absolutely gonna be on the record from the first day we wrote it, but and it's like, it's a lot of our favorites, but Yeah, Disaster just felt a little bit more indicative of the record as a whole. And we didn't want to do that thing where, you know, Sleeping In is a pretty just classic like pop punk song, you know? And the rest of the record isn't necessarily that. Whereas the rest of the record, you know, there's parts of it, there's parts of the record in Some Kind of Disaster on, you know, there's parts of every song in that song, whereas Sleeping In is kind of like in its own world. So we didn't want to like, we didn't want to tease and then be like, oh, never mind.
Yeah, for sure.
But that song, man, playing that song live has, you know, talking about Weightless. Weightless is a song that even though it's 11 years old, I still love playing it live. And Sleeping In, I feel like, you know, hopefully 10 years from now, we're still playing, but I feel like it's going to be like that. It's such a fun crowd song. It's a fun drumming song, and just the energy of it is just great.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome. So,
yeah, you kind of mentioned it a bit, but so this is the first record you guys have recorded just like in a house where you didn't go into a proper recording studio to do it. With it without, you know, some big shot producer and stuff. We did that with American Candy and with Little Lonely, and it was like the best thing that we ever did as bands. It was just so fun. Just like the environment and it makes making an album that you're like, why the hell did we ever do it any other way?
Yeah, man, it's so true. And you kind of like, you know, we obviously, we're very similar bands in that we've been together for forever. We all get along with one another. But touring with each other is a lot different than creating with each other. And you kind of forget the parts of your bandmates and your best friends that you kind of, you forget about that aspect of them. Of like, oh shit, yeah, it's great to play music with these people, but it's even greater to create with these people. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of lost on me for a while. And so, yeah, when you just wake up in a house with your four bandmates or three bandmates, and that day you're just there's a blank slate. It's just create, and there's no pressure. There's no like, yeah, there's no studio owner lording down on you. There's no big shot producer being like, well, I've got a meeting at 5, so we got to wrap this up. There were days that we'd work until like 3 a.m. Yeah. There are days that we'd go out to dinner at 7 p.m., get drunk, come back, write some more. And there are days that we just hang around the pool all day and not work at all if we weren't feeling it. And it just didn't feel like we were creating a record. It just felt like we were hanging out and back in the basement and just writing for fun. And I think that kind of shows through on the whole record.
Yeah. That's awesome. So like, was the intention to record the record in that house, or were you guys just going there to write at first?
Well, it started, like I said, in Nashville. What happened was, like, you guys have been in my studio, and you know, like, it's a nice studio, and it's you could do anything there. And Alex just wanted to do everything in the control room. So we would take scratch guitar tracks, which for the listener is just like a demo guitar track. It's not final. It's sloppy. Alex would sit on the couch in the control room with like a $300 mic and do the vocals. He didn't want to be in the vocal booth. He wanted instant feedback. He wanted to be able to be like, oh, let's take that again. Talk to Cervini right there. Talk to me right there. Phil Cornell. And like, this process just became this seamless little, it just, again, was just more relaxed. If he had a lyrical change he wanted to do, we might be working on song 4. And he'd be like, hey, can we go back to song 2? And I just want to try something new in the chorus. And because there was just so much fluidity, he could just do it from the couch. He just fell in love with that. So when we went to Palm Springs, it was the same thing. I mean, we recorded in this marble house, and if you listen to those vocal takes soloed out, it is brutal. Like, all you hear is reverb and echo and, like, you know, a blender in the background. It was like jumping in a pool in the background. And that was just how it stuck. I mean, the guitar parts are a little sloppy because a lot of them are just like scratch guitar parts. The only thing we went back and like overdubbed were the drums. Obviously, we didn't record the drums in the house. We went to a studio for that. And some of the vocal takes, like if it's really quiet and like you could hear the actual house, like we had to redo some of that. But yeah, the intention was just to, I think it came, was just to write. And then because of modern technology and things like, you know, Kempers and just plugins, you don't need a ton of hardware. I mean, it was just a Mac Pro, an SM7, all the acoustics were mic'd with an SM7, all the percussion with an SM7, and a Kemper, and that was pretty much it. And then bass was, you know, DI'd in there, right in this, you know, most of the bass tracks were recorded by Zach with a dripping bathing suit and no shirt on.
That sounds about right.
I guess there's a new off.
Did he ever do that before? I feel like that would be the only way he'd record.
I was going to say, you could probably fill in, instead of most of the bass parts, you could do anything. Most of the dinners, most of the whatever. most of the tax returns were filled out with Zach and certain. yeah, I don't know, man. It just was a lot. There was no deadline. Like, the fan base didn't really know we were recording a record. They knew we were together, and they knew we were writing, maybe, but there was no, like, stay tuned for what's next, or like, where do you hear this banger, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, they knew we were together, so there was just zero pressure, and things were just moving along. It was a really great experience.
Did you guys actually record or write any stuff in Palm Springs, like, as you're doing this?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, on the record, Sleeping In is a good example, but there's probably a good half of the record, maybe a little bit more of it than in Palm Springs. And, you know, like, someday we wake up and Alice would be like, meh, I'm not really feeling that creative today. Like, Ryan, can you program some drums? Or Zach do some bass? Or Jack do some guitar? And then there are other days where he would just wake up and be like, I have this idea. And he'd start with it and we'd just roll with that. And it was just, like, again, just fluid. We would just switch gears whenever it made sense.
Awesome. How much were you mapping out the drum parts, like, on the computer before you recorded, like the fills and stuff?
Pretty much to a T.
Okay.
So it's the way, you know, when I was working out of my studio producing, it's the way that I've always done it. It's just, like, by the time the drummer or me gets in there, like, the parts are already there.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm the drummer, especially. There's a few things that I changed in the moment, but for the most part, I would, with Cervini, program the drums exactly how I would like them to sound, so that drums are the last thing we did on the record. So there was no surprises and there was no change of feel or anything like that.
Yeah.
Nice. We put Pat through hell. We always have, like, weird loops. And then when he's actually doing it, we're like, no, try this. No, wait. No, like, do it like this. And it's always, like, people who don't play drums that, like, say to do this absurd shit that's, like, impossible to play, but he's like, in like 2 minutes he'll have it. It's always funny. I'm sorry, Pat.
It's
we
so
do that
good.
To
and it sucks so bad because like we'll like get them like down like pretty good like on the computer and pre-pro. So I'll like sit and listen to it and be like, all right, cool, you got it, and then. Well, on some action in there, it's like John every time is like, "Hey, but like,
yeah, dude, there's this great."
You did this?
I think I hope I didn't say this last time, but I don't care if I did. Hoppus did this quote to Feldman once, where Feldman, you know, Hoppus is doing vocals, and Feldman's like, "Hey, why don't you try this?" And Hoppus goes, "Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I'm just trying to think of what I would do if I was the singer of Blink-182." Damn good. So good.
Oh,
and it goes the same
fuck.
Way. Like, at some point, as a drummer, you're like, just because you can mouth a drum part doesn't mean it should be fucking played. Like,
yeah. But then it ends up, like, sometimes working out good where there's, like, parts that I, like, wouldn't have thought of.
Oh.
Like, in the taxi, there's, like, the, like, little drum, like, stutter, kind of, like a triplet thing. Like,
into that last
chorus. And it's like, I wouldn't have done that. And he was just like, you know, just like do this. And then, you know, and that ends up being like a big part in the song.
The amount of times after a drum day where I go up to Alex and I'm like, you know, having beers or whatever. And I'm like, I'm sorry, man. Again, you were so right.
Yeah.
Like, damn it. Because they have an overhead view. You know what I mean? You're so tuned in and you're so laser focused on what you're playing and how you heard it that it's hard to accept anything else as being a better idea.
And there's so much, like, pressure. It's like everybody else is in a different room and it feels like they're like talking about you the whole time about like, oh, he's talking
so true. Well, and it's like, and they're all just watching you.
Pat, do you remember on Flowers of the Grave on the last chorus, during the song, I had Squire, I told him to turn the mic on, and I said, do the Jimmy fill. And so there's this Jimmy Eat World fill that I love that it's like this tom hit. And while he's recording it, because it's pretty much that whole last chunk was one take, I was like, do the Jimmy fill. And then all of a sudden, the next like round, he puts it in, and I was like, yeah!
Oh, it's so good. And it's so, that's another thing about being in a band together for so long. It's like, Pat knows what the Jimmy fill is.
Yeah.
And by the way, knowing that song and knowing Jimmy, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh,
oh,
man. Oh, band talk.
Yeah. Now for the 30 listeners we have left.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk more about drum fills.
You know, I think the other interesting thing that you guys did was to take that long of a break, which is something that, like, I've kind of always had an interest in, and being like, what would happen if we just didn't do anything for a year? You know, what was kind of the thought process in that? Like, were you guys burnt out, or just like wanted to do other things there?
I've been very choosy about like my wording with this, because I know people, like, not you guys, but like we've seen poll quotes that have been like, all time low was on the brink of a breakup. Read what's next. It's like, no. But no, yeah, we were tired, and we were, you know, last time Renegade was a tough record cycle for us. Touring wise, it was incredible. It was kind of bigger than we've ever been, and we had a bigger show than ever. But my mom's FaceTiming me, hang on. We had to kind of like convince people, like we talked about earlier, like we had to put on shows to be like, no, these translate live. These are badass. And the idea of Renegade was for it to be kind of like a separation of All Time Low. Like, it's an All Time Low record through and through, and it's got some of my favorite songs on it that we've ever done. But it was like, it was a departure, and it was a deliberate departure from what we've been doing. And so by the end of that record cycle, we were just kind of like gassed, and we'd toured for so long. We'd never taken a break. We didn't really know where we wanted to go creatively. And Alex had, you know, Simple Creatures. He had been talking to Mark and writing with Mark about this. Jack had wanted to like try his hand in writing a little bit more with a different kind of project. And I wanted to do the studio stuff. And so we kind of just chatted, and we were like, well, let's just fucking chill for a year and not focus on touring and not, you know, just hammer it in more, not like force a record. And because of that, because we were able to flex our creativity a little bit on Lasting Renegade, because Alex was able to write Simple Creatures and Jack for Who Hurt You, we were able to kind of rejoin as one single focus for Wake Up Sunshine. I don't think without Renegade, Wake Up Sunshine would have been written. I don't think without Simple Creatures, without Who Hurt You, it just wouldn't have happened. So by the time we got back together and refocused on everything, we just missed All Time Low so much. And that's what Sunshine was, you know, born out of.
Yeah.
How into a year off were you like, fuck, I kind of want to go back out?
It was longer than I thought, probably about 2 weeks. yeah, man, it was not long. Probably around, well, you know, Alex came to Nashville around February, and that really made me want to go play shows. And then April comes around, and I'm just like, oh my god, like it was 2019 was a really tough year for me, because you kind of forget just psychologically how much touring means to you and how much it becomes your purpose in life, you know what I mean? And sure, I can produce and I can engineer, but that's not what I do. I can do it, but it's not what I do. And with touring being stripped away, I kind of felt like I was just floating. Like I was an autopilot. You know, I'd wake up, I'd do my thing, I'd go out with friends, but I was like, I just didn't have that purpose and that like feeling of, oh yeah, you're doing the right thing in your life right now. So
yeah,
it didn't take long before I realized that. And luckily, again, I got a good friend group. I had good relationships at the time. And it was fine. And then more importantly, when it came time to get back to work, I was just ready.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, I'm sure it was kind of weird. Like, what was it? Was it weird being at home and seeing, like, Simple Creatures?
out doing festivals and.
Yeah, it was. I wasn't jealous. I was envious. Like, cause yeah. I remember Alex calling me. I was outside of. Did we go to Baja Burrito when you guys were at the studio?
I don't think so. I think we ordered pizza.
It's a Mexican place right near my studio, and I remember being outside of there, and Alex calling me, and I was immediately like, this is not going to be good. You know how like some people like I talk to Alex every day, but an unsolicited phone call is like. Oh God.
Yeah.
And he goes, hey man, you know, what's going on? How are you doing? I'm like, Alex, what's happening right now? And he was like, so, you know, Mark and I have been talking and we've been writing together and he wanted to start a band with me. And I was like, yeah. And I just remember being like waiting for like some bombshell. And he was like, I just want to make sure it's cool with you. It's just going to be for this year. We'll never interfere with All Time Low. I was like, dude, fucking absolutely. And I was like, my initial reaction, I say this without reservation, was just, I was so fucking proud. Like, I was like, no one, you know, we started the band for the Blink. We started the band 100% for the Blink. And for Mark to want to be in a band with our main songwriter, it was incredible. So I would see them touring and I would be like, fuck, I wish I could be doing that. But no, it was never like with any sort of negative emotion attached to it.
Totally.
And it just, again, just made me want to tour even more.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine how that would feel. It's like, that's insane that he's in a band with. I mean, and obviously it's kind of this weird thing where you guys have like become friends with them and stuff, so and toured with them so much that like, the excitement isn't as insane as it was. But if you just like think back to when you guys were 16, it's just like, holy, that's like,
I mean, my first tattoo, my first drum cover, our first band, everything. And then the only thing I was really jealous about throughout the whole process was who hurt you being able to play with the main. That I was pissed about. I was like, that should be me. That should absolutely be me.
Oh, man.
Pat, how did you, not to turn the tables here, but how did you feel about, I know you've been in this, how long have you guys been together?
13 years.
Yeah, so. How did it feel to not miss a show, but to miss like a tour? I know obviously it was for the best reason in the world, but still had to be a little rough.
Yeah, I mean, it was very weird. Like I would say like the first like week and a half, I was really bummed. And just like looking up things on Instagram and like seeing it, I'm just like, oh my God, like this is so weird. But I just obviously kept having to remind myself that, you know, the best thing ever. And
it's not like you had a sprained left ankle.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it ended up being fine. And I think, you know, more than anything, it like kind of gave me some time because, you know, it ended up being that the, you know, my baby wasn't born until like the last three shows of the tour, so yeah, I had a long time, and it really like allowed me to like take a second and like put some things in perspective of like what I think like we should do next for the band, because like just like you guys, like we're always just in like what's next, let's go, you know. So it was like
absolutely
some thinking.
And I know like running into, you know, we ran into Garrett and the main boys in when we were playing in Leeds. You kind of also forget that, and I think I can say this without, I think this is true, that not only are you the drummer, but you're kind of the showrunner. You're kind of Larry David to Seinfeld, you know what I mean? Like, where they were kind of just like, I think individually all of the dudes are like, we don't know what the fuck we're doing without Pat. Like, drumming is one thing, but you were very much missed, so it was a funny thing.
Yeah.
Like you being off now, I'm just like thinking about Sad Summer and just like so excited to get back out there and play.
I'm like, you know when this podcast is coming out?
Whenever we see, I mean, probably pretty soon.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we just put out that statement yesterday, that everything's going on as planned, and yeah, that'll be, I mean, obviously we have to roll with the punches no matter what, but I feel pretty confident, and I'm just like, that's, that's my ray of light at the end of all this. Like, you know, I said, this has been a rough month for everyone, but Nashville got hit kind of especially hard. And that's been like my, that's still here. Like, I get to tour with my best friends and some of my best friends and fans, and just all throughout the summer. And that's been such a guiding light for me. So again, thank you guys.
And I'm thinking that for the fans too. It's like, I'm sure it feels really good to have a calendar that's like, I get this full day just to have fun, you know?
Yep.
Think it's going to make the shows even better. You know, everybody's going to be so excited for it.
I agree, man. Like, it feels like it's, you know, obviously this is such a horrible thing that's happening right now, and that's all it goes without saying. But you're so right that more than ever, people need a reason just to relax and to release and to just smile. And I think that, ironically, it's the sad summer fest that'll ever be that for a lot of people.
Exactly. Should
change it just for the year, happy fest. Everyone get fucking happy.
Happy, healthy fest.
Yeah.
But no, I'm just so, like, I feel like all the bands on the lineup, I mean, just like when you say it out loud, like, you know, all time low, the story so far, the main movement, Grayscale, and on, it's just like, it just sounds insane.
Oh yeah. And honestly, like, you know how we were talking about first song release and record release and like how edgy you get about like your fan response. Touring is a whole nother boat where like you love the lineup, or maybe you don't sometimes, but you know it's right. With this lineup, I know we were all like just fucking stoked. And then we released it, and without fail, the fan base was like, yes, I'm fucking going.
Yeah. I mean, it's fucking sold out Pier 17 in a couple hours.
It's insane, man. What a beautiful venue that place is.
Oh, it's awesome. Okay, here's almost 4,000 tickets of the day. Like, sweet.
That's so wild, man. Good for all of us.
Yeah. It's awesome. I mean, does the tour like also kind of feel like a return to something for you guys too? Like, I feel like it's like been a bit since you guys have done like a tour with this big of a package, you know?
Oh, for sure, man. I think, you know, for a lot of our touring career, or more recently especially, like, we kind of try to go, I don't know, just we tried to like bring bands that maybe we wouldn't normally tour with or wouldn't normally want to tour with us. And it was a great experience, and I got to meet some amazing musicians and amazing bands. But for this summer, we just wanted to fucking play shows with our friends and put, you know, just and have as many fans be able to see the show as possible. And so obviously with you guys, we were able to curate this like thing that I remember, and I still listen to pretty much every band on this bill. And I listen to this kind of music all the time. And I remember thinking I would fucking pay to see this show, which I don't say a lot. I'm jaded. I don't like to go see shows. But yeah, man, there's not one of us that's like, fine, I'll show up for our set and leave. Like, we're all just stoked to be there all day. So
yeah. And I feel like there's just something so fun about like being on this kind of a tour in the summer where it's just like, everybody's going to be hanging out and, you know, we're going to set up a bar backstage and everybody's going to be playing cornhole and drinking and hanging out. And like, it's just going to feel, it makes the whole day fun as opposed to just like, all right, let's sit around and wait for our set time.
Yeah, and just sit around this shitty dressing room in this venue that hasn't been touched since 1964. And like, yeah, and especially like, you know, the bands that are our age grew up going to festivals, going to Warped Tour, and like spending a day at a show and seeing your favorite band. And the bands that are younger wish they had that. And so, you know, with you guys creating this festival, and the same that goes to the fan base, like the fan base that is too young to go to Warped Tour, they know about it and they read about it and they wish they could have gone. So you guys have created this all day affair where people get to experience that and get to see their favorite band. So yeah, and regarding the bar backstage, we'll be blackout by our set every time.
And like to me, what makes it so cool is like it has like the spirit and the energy of like you're talking about the festivals that we grew up going to, like on a Warped Tour and stuff. But then it has this, like, it's not so, like, every band just gets a half an hour and doesn't have any production, and, like, and it's just, like, uncomfortable, but you just kind of do it. It's like, this is going to be, like, such a better experience for the fans. And
It's like, absolutely.
They're going to get to watch, like, a full headlining All-Time Low show in the dark at night, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah, that's a good point too. Is like there were, I mean, obviously we owe a ton to Warped Tour, but there were things that the fans did not like about it, and there were many things the bands did not like about it. But all of that kind of goes away when you have, you know, instead of 50 bands on the bill, you have between 5 and 10. You know what I mean? And it's like, or 6, and, you know, in this case it was 7. But yeah, it's just, you're right. You can kind of cater to every band, make sure every person is taken care of. You know everyone's name. There's no like anonymity. We're all, it's more of a family, less of like a circus. And the fan base as well, like there's enough, we can cater to every single fan, make sure that every type of fan is taken care of. So
I can't wait.
It's gonna be so freaking awesome. So
ready.
What are you gonna be doing for the next two weeks to a month?
Well, because I just got power back a few days ago, I'm like all excited about that. Like, I'm turning lights on and off, and that's enough. And then, I just got Wi-Fi a day or two ago, so I'm like rediscovering Netflix. I'm like, oh, you can stream Curb Your Enthusiasm. but yeah, I'm doing well. I like, you know, for us touring people, being at home and not touring, you kind of get used to, you know, not getting up and going to work. Like, so it's not too much of a shift for people like us. Obviously not being able to hang out with friends and bars and cafes and stuff is weird, but I know that psychologically it's probably a lot harder for people that have spent their lives waking up and spending 8-9 hours at work every single day. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the struggle. I can sit around, drink coffee, work out in my garage, play some drums, and then I go to bed. Like, that's not too different than my normal day. So I'm doing okay so far. A lot of FaceTime, a lot of group FaceTime, and just pretending like we're at a bar all drinking. So
nice.
What about you guys? Are you going crazy yet?
I'm doing okay. The only thing, it's like, I've kind of like, I had a bit of a cold like before all this began. So I've just like been afraid to be around the baby all that much, just because,
of course, yeah,
with all the uncertainty. So I've kind of been in the other end of the house, kind of on my own. So
yeah,
but
that's got to be tough.
Yeah.
So that's hard. It's like I'm FaceTiming my wife to look at my baby. So it like feels like I'm on the road or something.
Yeah. You know?
I've just been nerding out, messing with keyboards in my, I have a shed in my backyard that is like kind of my studio vibe, and I've just got all these keyboards back there, and I'm like, I'm going full scientist for like hours.
Oh, I was going to say, like, what a great time to be a creative person. Like, I mean, I should rephrase that, but like, to be forced into a creative atmosphere or just be bored out of your mind has got to be a great inspiration for a creative mind.
Oh yeah, I mean, like that's why I think it's like a good time, because like, I mean, our band was supposed to be working on like writing songs right now, so it's kind of like, all right, we're just working on things on our own. But you know, most of the ideas kind of come from John from the beginning, like anyway. So he's just been working away on ideas. So
yeah, and you know, you might hit one of those things where you're, but like we did last year, writing this record, is like by the time you finally can get together, it'll just be like this explosion of like, let's fucking do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Well, can't wait for Sad Summer. Can't wait for people to hear the whole album and for me to hear it. I think I've heard 8 songs or so, and they're all.
Yeah, I'll have to get you a stream of it. It's out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I'll have to get you
the stream. I want to hear it. And it's like, I mean, 15 songs. That's on vocal.
Yeah, man, it's a lot. It's not something we'd ever planned to do, but we literally, and this is going to sound so shitty, but like, we just couldn't cut another one. We all agreed on these 15 songs, and there was probably another 15 to 20 to choose from. And of those 15 to 20, we each wanted like a different three. So it, but these 15, we're like, yeah, these have to be on. And then by the time we realized how many had to be on, we were like, oh, well, that's it. That's more than a full record.
Yeah.
So I think people will be down for the ride. It definitely, it doesn't get boring and there's ups and downs to it. So yeah, I'll definitely send it over to you guys.
Cool.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's a good problem to have, because we are kind of, it's always in the opposite thing where we're like with Lovely Little Lonely, we're like, technically there's like 7 or 8 actual songs on this, because those are the only ones that are good that we have.
Yeah. It's so funny. But then like, it's so funny. Hey, and then we listen to demos from like that time and we're like, why the fuck didn't we record this song? Like, there's this song that we've had for since then that we always go back, oh, we're going to put it on this record. And then it just doesn't. It's just so funny.
It's so weird how that shit happens, man. Yeah. It's just, you're so in the project that you have no perspective. You have no like bird's eye view of what might fit in it. You just like, no, that's done. That's not on the record. And that just works.
Totally. It's so funny.
Oh, man.
Well, dope. Insane.
Well, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, guys. I appreciate you having me back out anytime.
Hell yeah.
We'll do it again in a week when we're even crazier.
Absolutely.